The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551. Now, Coleman Nocter, our child psychotherapist, joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Coleman.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Thanks for coming in. We said you were coming in, so we have a list of queries and questions from our listeners, so we'll get to them. I won't miss any more time. Hi, Ray, Coleman. My 14-year-old son suffers with anxiety, and it's all around health. He's convinced himself he has cancer and is afraid to die. He's been to doctors. There's nothing physically wrong with him. Doctors say it's physical signs of anxiety. Can you please advise what road to go? Many thanks, M.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about this before in a younger child, you know, that kind of fear of death, and we talked about kind of permanency and all that. As a 14-year-old, it's a different kettle of fish. This isn't a developmental worry. This is something different to that. And these kind of somatizing worries, which worry about health or cancer or heart issues, would be a common manifestation of anxiety. And basically, what this is... The somatizing fear is not the problem. This is his solution to the problem, okay. If that makes sense. So the child who has these fears will look for reassurance all the time. And each time they're told, you're not going to die, you don't have cancer, they have this momentary relief. But then it doesn't satisfy that need. So the question comes again, okay. Right? It's easier to worry about something that's not going to happen than actually worry about something that is happening.
So they're anxious, generally anxious. And
generally
this is
anxious.
Just the peak, is it? This is just the thing.
This is the symptom. It's the method of communication. So The anxiety might be about school, it might be about growing up, it might be about puberty. But these are all vague kind of challenges that are really hard to articulate and hard to kind of manage. And if you were to actually sit and think about growing up and responsibility and all that, it'd be overwhelming because you can't control it. Whereas this, there's an object, the objection of this.
So he's channeling his anxiety into one specific thing,
into
dying
the
of
physical
cancer.
Manifestation.
Okay, right.
So when you come with this and you get tested and it comes back clear, the reassurance doesn't work because it's still, you're trying, the symptom serves a function here, which is to communicate anxiety about how he feels, but because it's not the origin of the anxiety, the relentless reassurance will not work. So what you have to do here is kind of find the origin of the anxiety, which is oftentimes in a very generalized anxiety way. It could be anything, it could be everything. I would suggest this young man, actually 14, would need to go and see someone as a therapist at this level, because again we'd write it out if he was 8, you know, we'd kind of think
as a phase.
This is kind of just an idea of permanency. He's kind of worrying about that. This is more sinister in terms of my own concerns about it. Remember that the reassurance won't work because you're actually just filling a leaking bucket in that sense. But there is something troubling this boy. It may indeed be a physiological disorder of anxiety that he can't manage. But there might be life stuff here that he might actually need help working through. So GP, therapist, or local CAMS, maybe a therapist first and see if he can help. Because simple CBT techniques of trying to work through managing anxiety a long time alongside exploring what this might be about. Really, anxiety is very treatable. This boy could do well.
Great. That's good news, isn't it? That's good news. Now, Coleman, my 10-year-old gets so furious and wound up and overwhelmed, he literally puts his head in a pillow and screams, then asks me how he can stop being so stressed. To Google it for him, I feel so sad and don't know what to tell him. We usually hug it out. So he asks why I'm being so stressed and he gets his mom or his dad to Google it for him.
Yeah, Google's not
going to
give it. Yeah, that's the go-to here, you know. And I think from the point of view, at 10 years of age, he's emotionally dysregulated. That's what you call this sort of kind of hyper arousal around emotions. And if there's nothing quite clearly linked to this, like there's no bullying going on in school, there's no stress going on, and this seems to be coming out of the blue, he just might struggle with emotional regulation. And what I would say is always, when words fail, behavior takes over. So if we can't talk about something, that's when we kick out or we lash out or we scream in pillows and that kind of, it's beyond words. This boy, and even though he's 10, I know loads of 10-year-olds who really don't have an emotional vocabulary. They might be really articulate and tell you about Mo Salah, or they could tell you about anything that's going on in their lives, and they seem really clued in, but their emotional intelligence around how they feel is sometimes, and again, if this guy is going to Google for his answers, there may be steps being missed if it's kind of technological responses are kind of heavily leaning in that way. And that's where we kind of miss out on those emotional steps of teaching children how to understand themselves.
How do you do that in a general way?
I think what I was going to say next is you use stories. Right. I always think this is really good. Again, he's a little bit old, but you could read to him about characters that you're reading about and say, well, how do you think he feels? What is that like for him to feel threatened, to feel out of control, to feel scared? And it's really that these are things that are oftentimes in modern culture, they're surplus to requirements. You don't tend to read to our children as much anymore. We don't tend to explain things anymore. If you're going to a child, and just telling them to stop and not telling them why they need to stop, because if you touch that, you'll burn your hand, you miss that bit out of creating understanding. And it's just in the busyness of our lives, we sometimes drive to the outcome and forget the process. And this young guy just may be struggling with his emotional life. He might be struggling with the emotions that are... He's 10, so he's probably got pre-pubertal kind of cranky bit of frustration coming through, and he's not able to put words on it, and that's why the behaviour is taking over. So provide him with the words, use language, encourage regulation, and encourage language development through those stories, books, and questioning him, asking about it. It might seem like it's a little bit of nagging, but you're actually educating him as you go. So it's simple things, and I wouldn't make too much of a deal out of it. Chances are he'll grow out of it.
Okay. Could you ask Coleman his opinion on this? We have two boys, 9 and 12, one with ADHD and the other with ADD, is it?
Yeah.
We have had them both diagnosed and are on meds, which are working well. The thing is that even though we go to great lengths to explain how things work and why we do certain things, both boys just won't do what they're told. We're not very strict.
Okay, I mean, ADHD and ADD, the difference between that is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which is a kind of kinetic, busy, kind of active, physically active child, and the ADD is an attention deficit disorder. So they may not have the same activity problems, but they struggle with concentration, etc. If they're on meds and they're diagnosed, maybe there is a degree of improvement in this. I might get in trouble for this, but some children use their diagnosis to... excuse sometimes behaviour. The issue here is...
You would see that in your work, would you?
Yeah, of course. I mean, in terms of, you know, I can't do my homework because of my ADD, or I can't do this because of that. And children are children, so they will want to be able to manipulate things. Now, the difference between a child with ADHD and a child without is that they're unable rather than unwilling. Right, and the key for any parent of any child, and this is a really difficult task, is to decide what's unwilling and what's unable. And you treat them differently. The inability is about supporting them, arm around the shoulder, and concentration issues. The unable or the unwilling might be a little bit of incentive and, dare I say, sanction, or, you know, trying to improve their behaviours that way. Sometimes with a diagnosis, we feel disabled from actually normal house rules normal ways of managing.
That's completely understandable from a parent's point
of view. Absolutely, because you don't want to be giving a child grief about something they can't help.
Yes.
But you do need to give support to things that they can help. And being able to do what you're told, I mean, is it that they're doing what they're told and are unable to follow instruction? And there might be something, like if you tell an ADHD child, go up and get the blue hairbrush, bring it back down with the white towel, they'll get distracted. And that may indeed be part of the symptom of their profile. But if they say, no, I'm not going to do it, that's different because they haven't made an effort. So what I'd be saying is reward effort, not outcome in this family. If they look like they're trying, incentivize that and really jump on that and really get that in with the praise
well done,
and things.
Good boy.
You know, you're making an effort. Yeah, it's not about whether you succeed or not, but if you're making an effort, I'm happy enough with that. And don't be afraid to actually try and instill a degree of home culture, that we listen to each other in this family. We try to listen to each other. We try and follow out what we're trying to do, and creating that, it doesn't have to be strict, it just has to be clear. Again, I just work on very clear messaging and trying to be as neutral as you can and not getting overly involved emotionally in it, because if you get overexcited about it, they tend to not, it becomes white noise.
White noise, okay. I think we've time for one more. We do. My 2-year-old won't stay asleep in her own bed for a full night. She goes down fine, but normally about 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, she wakes up crying for me or my husband. We also have a 6-month-old who is in the room with us, so all panic stations start to get before she wakes him. So we have to get to her before she wakes him. So every night, my husband or myself take her into the spare room where she falls straight back asleep. Has your guest any tips on how or what to do to get her to sleep the full night in her own bed? This has been going on for about 8 months now.
Okay, my question here is why you bring it to the spare room and not bring her back to her own bed. And maybe that's because it's a full size bed in the spare room, and so dad can lie with her.
Yes, yeah.
I always say this, if a child comes to you and says, there's a monster under my bed, and you say, hop in here beside me, essentially what you're saying is,
there is a monster under your bed. Right. So,
and this is 2 a.m. in the morning, this is a 6-month-old, it's stressful, but you have to bring them back. And this is the labor, this is the walking in the dark, early hours, going back, setting them in. And what you're doing is you're trying to get them to stay in their own room, and you wean yourself off them gradually. So this is a 2-week piece of work in order to do that, but always bring them back to their own room by jumping in the duvet or opening the duvet and say hop in here, or going into spare rooms and lying with them. You're creating you're almost confirming the fear that they have that they can't be alone, and what you're truly really trying to say is there's no monster under your bed, you can do this, I believe in you, but I'll support you until you're better able to do it. But this is a few weeks work, not one night, unfortunately.
But very few adults still sleep with their parents.
No, that's true. This will pass.
Colman Uchter, thank you so much for that. And Colman will be back with us in a few weeks' time. As always, great advice. That's it from us for today. Katie Hannon is on the way with Drive Time. We are back on the radio 3 o'clock tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.
The Ray Darcy Show. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.